Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Jez Butterworth's The Ferryman is currently running on Broadway at the Jacobs Theater, directed by Sam Mendes. The New York Times review of the production called the show an endlessly vibrant work directed with sweeping passion and meticulous care by Sam Mendes. The review went on to say, "This is theater as charged and expansive as life itself." The West End production won 3 Obie Awards, including Best New Play and Best Director. Set in rural Northern Ireland in 1981, the Kearney Farmhouse is a hive of activity with preparations for the annual harvest. 3 generations of Kearneys live in the house, a family tree with a jumble of branches, connecting on this special annual event to cousins, strays, and, unwanted by most in the house, a cause with dire consequences. Mark Lambert plays Uncle Patrick Kearney, or Uncle Pat, a jovial storyteller and keeper of household tradition.
The harvest is sacred. The harvest is breath and life and spirit.
Lambert, who's had an illustrious career on the stage, primarily in London and in Dublin, makes his Broadway debut in The Ferryman. Mark Lambert, welcome to the Roundtable.
Hello, and nice to be here.
Thank you so much for taking the time. Let's begin with when you first encountered this script by Jez Butterworth. Tell me how you first received The Ferryman.
Well, I received The Ferryman in the post, like lots of scripts arrive. I'm based in Dublin, and the play originated in the Royal Court and went to the West End, and I joined it in the West End in the Gielgud Theatre, where I'd last been 10 years before that in production of All's Well That Ends Well with Judi Dench. And when I received the script, I had heard that the play was fantastic already because it had been on at the Royal Court. It had only been on the Royal Court for 3 weeks, but the news travels fast. And also, any new play by Jez Butterworth arouses interest, I would say now, internationally. And this particular play, because it's set in Ireland, was of even more interest to me. The reading of it, I suppose, is a bit like watching it in the theatre. It's a page-turner, and you can't put it down, literally. And I'm not just selling it as that. That was literally the way I read the script. I forgot what I was reading for, you know, the part. It was just the whole play takes you up and spits you out in the best possible way.
It absolutely does. Were you sent the script to play the role that you ultimately do play?
Yes, indeed. Uncle Pat. I immediately, you know as an actor sometimes when you receive a script and a part that you go, I can do this, I can make something of this. You also appreciate from a writer a journey a character goes on and gives you plenty of a range of things. So on the one hand, Uncle Pat in the play functions as a storyteller and as an upbeat, rather optimistic character, but he also has his moment of, you know, melancholy, disillusion, sadness as well at the end, and that makes a really great journey for an actor to be able to play all the strings, as it were, and all the notes.
Can you tell me about working with your director, Sam Mendes?
Well, Sam Mendes certainly ranks in the top 3 directors I've ever worked with. I've worked with Trevor Nunn and Max Stafford Clark, and Sam Mendes is just out there on his own. He's fantastic because he has a sort of forensic attention to detail. And it's very interesting as an actor when you hear notes being given to other actors and you think, oh, that's brilliant, that's really good. So when you receive the notes, whether they're critical or not, you have to take them because you know that they're good as well. And certainly, I found myself literally, I mean, you always sometimes argue the toss with a director about certain things. I can't remember a single thing I've argued with Sam over and said, well, actually, I was trying to do this and you obviously haven't got it. He was always right. And he just makes actors act better. And he also creates the platform for you to act better in, because you understand the world you're working in and, you know, what is going on between in every scene between each other. And it's a talent. And I know in this particular production, he had to stage the play before he actually got to rehearsal in his own head, because there were so many people in it, as you know. There's 21 speaking characters and more. Therefore, you know, there'd been chaos if he just stood it up and started to move it around. So in an odd sort of situation, we were sort of blocked, as they call it in the theatre, where you're staged. You stand there, you stand there. But it actually made no difference, and you were free to change it if you wanted. But his choreography is sensational, really. And also he's aware of sound and the whole world. So you subliminal sound goes on throughout the production. In fact, there's a soundtrack that goes on for the entire production, from animal sounds in the farm to almost filmic drone sounds. You have the sound of the banshees screaming, and it's all subtly done, so you're barely aware of it. And I think maybe that comes from his film directing as well, but it adds to the theatre's experience hugely, I think.
The play deals with a full breadth of human emotion, from very high to very low, and in and out and in between. It's extremely emotional. How do you gather that momentum to be able to do that as many times a week as you have to do it?
Well, I think that's a really good question, because actually, again, going back to Sam Mendes, he's the first director that I've ever heard acknowledge the emotional cost for actors to commit to it every night, where you each night is a first night, as it were, first experience for that audience. And this cast, I'm extremely proud of, because I've never once felt that anybody is backpedaling or not committing to the emotional moments, or any moments, in fact. But I think it's partly a muscle that is used by an actor over time. You obviously don't try not to take it home with you, obviously, otherwise you'd be a wreck.
Yeah.
I think it does take a cost after over a period of time, I think. But it's generally one of those things that actors, you know, we're having fun with each other off stage, and, you know, we might have maybe sometimes have a drink afterwards, and but we meet before the show and all that, and it's good humoured. And then for those few precious moments on stage, you've got to enter a different world and use a part of yourself that is emotional. I mean, you can sit down and listen to some wonderful music and weep your eyes out, and the next moment have to get up and make dinner for your family or something, and be joyful and fun. And that's, you know, in a sense, there's a similarity to that as well.
Is it different for you, or based on the audience reaction, performing it in the States on Broadway than it was in London?
Well, strangely enough, we've all remarked upon the fact that it sounds like I'm flattering the American audience, but and I am in a way, but it's not that we didn't enjoy it in London. We did, and we had full houses that were, you know, also gave us standing ovations, but there's a lot more detail for some reason. We thought it might be the opposite because of our Irish accents and the subject matter, but for some reason there's a bigger reaction with the comedy in particular, but also just in general behaviour. So this play, which is, you know, I'm not going to label as a tragic comedy, but in a sense it has that moments of where it does go from comedy to tragedy in a split second. And the audience are, I don't know whether it's the sophistication of the audience or it's just in the nature of Americans, but seem to be going with it. And we've had no complaints at all, other than the odd phone going off, which happens in every theatre all over the world, unfortunately, at the moment. But in terms of respecting, there's a couple of moments where there's a joyous dance and everybody's having great fun, and then in the next moment they're talking about the death of the hunger strikers. And it's remarkable that the flip and the change. The audience seem to absolutely get it and understand the change of mood. So we've been really enjoying it, and enjoying the full houses. That goes without saying. But also just you feel people are getting it. I mean, there's, you know, this play is 3 hours long, and there's 90-year-olds sitting in the first and second row who don't move. It's fantastic. They're just lapping it up. And, you know, I've been to plays that are an hour long and I feel distinctly uncomfortable and I feel I've sat through 6 hours. But this play, for some reason, just brings you along with it. And, you know, some people say it could have gone another hour and they would have noticed. So we're very happy with being here on Broadway, and obviously it's a mecca for most actors around the world, and it's very exciting, my tender age, to be able to say I've played Broadway.
Your character, Uncle Pat, is well-versed in Virgil. Do you come to Virgil with any familiarity prior to this script?
Only going way, way back to school. We did read sections of the Aeneid, and I did classics for a very short period at school, and I'm sad about that in a way. I'd love to say I was an expert in classics and Virgil, and I'm not. But the wonderful thing that everybody's discovered is that he still speaks across the generations and still makes sense. And of course, Uncle Pat uses Virgil to try and explain something that the Catholic Church can't. And it's also a thing that Jez Butterworth constantly goes back to in all his plays. He's very keen on the classics and what they've got to say for us today.
Did you need or do you get assistance, like dramaturgical assistance, in making sure you're delivering it correctly, or is it all sort of in the pages that are provided?
No, I think there's the odd, if you have a question about how to pronounce, you know, Chiamites, mm-hmm. you will ask the director, who will seek some, you know, wise sage from Oxford University to tell you whether he's pronouncing it right or not. But no, generally speaking, the dramaturgy has been done beforehand. And I mean, obviously in the Royal Court, there was a different form of dramaturgy going on because they were making cuts and right up to the, you know, the last week of rehearsal, I think, in terms of what should stay and what should go. Some big decisions were made there. You know, say T.S. Eliot says, sometimes a writer has to kill its your darlings,
right.
Your pages that you absolutely love. But I don't think Uncle Pat's got plenty to say, so I have no complaints over that.
Many of the characters drink a lot during the play. Do you start to play tipsier, or is your tolerance so high that is your character's tolerance so high that you don't really get drunk?
There are two things. One is that is, you know, a couple of Irish people have seen this play in London, were a bit chippy about it and said it's a representation of the Irish drinking a lot. Actually, in all Jez Butterworth's plays, everybody drinks. Mm-hmm. And in fact, in Jerusalem, they did more than drink in terms of, you know, taking intoxicating...
Right, substances.
substances. But in terms of my particular character who drinks, my reasoning is that he is not actually a big drinker. He's not an alcoholic. It's the harvest festival.
Right.
And he uses that, obviously, as an excuse to drink. And that's not uncommon in Ireland. So I'd say, well, it's St. Patrick's Day, or if it's a particular day, Christmas Day, they will use it to drink. But I don't think during the rest of the week that Uncle Pat would maybe have more than one whiskey to go to bed with, maybe to help him sleep. In this particular play, it's taken over a day. I probably have four whiskeys, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Throughout
the play. That's not that much at all.
And I wouldn't make him drunk. So I, by the way, love playing drunk on stage. I've done it in many a play. But I steadfastly didn't make a decision. And also, I don't think it's within the play. And I don't think Sam Mendes wanted it for him to play drunk at all in this. And I don't think it's because he's got a huge capacity, actually. He probably would have more than some of the others. But and also, he gives, at one point, he gives whiskey, tiny drops of whiskey, to the children. And I think, again, that's only on one occasion in the year, probably, that would have happened. And they give such little amounts that wouldn't do them any harm at all. I've done it to my own children, actually, just for fun.
How wonderful are those children?
They're amazing. And they're also American, which is remarkable. Their accents are terrific. they're also extraordinary. There's one girl in it who I rather patronisingly said on first day of rehearsal, I said, is this your first time on Broadway? And she paused and looked up in the air and said, my seventh, actually. And she's only 14.
Wow.
She's been in Matilda, she's been in Harry Potter, she's been in School of Rock, etc. So they're all really high standard young children actors. The only thing I find remarkable is that they're on every night. I mean, every performance, they do the same amount as we do, 8 shows a week. And their consistency and stamina is remarkable. The baby changes, obviously. We have a few babies on hand.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Same goose, same rabbit. But the children are fantastic, and it's to their credit that they're so good and so consistent, and very natural children off stage as well. There's nothing precocious or showbiz about them at all. They're lovely children, which is also makes it even better for us.
Mark Lambert plays Uncle Pat Carney in The Ferryman by Jez Butterworth, playing at the Jacobs Theatre on Broadway. The show is, I mean, everybody says so and everybody is right. It's absolutely magnificent. And I thank you again very much for speaking with me about it.
Not at all. It's a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much.
Links to more information will be posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.